Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
Lord William Regal. I call him Steve Regal. What do you like to be called?
I don't care.
All right.
Steve's fine.
Bollocks.
Bollocks is good, yeah.
Hey, let's go back to the time when I met you at Center Stage TV. You just come in. I was like, man, William Regal or whatever they're calling you. You came in as William Regal?
No, I came in as Steve.
Steve Regal. Yeah. So it was the Lord thing when you got with Dundee.
That was later on,
right.
Yes.
But I remember you came in. I can't remember who you was working with, and I watched you work. Like, you were selling your ass, and I came up, and I stuck my hand out. Hey, man, Steve Austin, man, nice to meet you. It was badass work. I just love the way you sold. And you had been working at that point probably 10 years?
Nearly 10 years, yeah.
So what got the bug up your ass? I mean, you're working your ass off in England. You come up the hard way, kind of learning the carnies, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, incredible technician, and you said, hey, I'm picking up my bags, I'm going to the United States of America.
Well,
what spurred that decision?
It started off in England, and I didn't think I'd go any further. I was quite happy working on the fairground. Honestly, I thought, because I had
it had been fun, but it had been tough.
It was, but I didn't feel tough at the time, because I was 16, playing at Bean Wrestlers, living in Wonderland, and it was Wonderland to me. I was, you know, like, biggest amusement park in Britain. I'm wrestling on it and just living in that scene when it was still alive, you know.
Yeah.
So it went down a lot in the 90s and stuff, but in the 80s it was still buzzing. The shows on everywhere, there's clubs. It was just a great place to be. And I had no athletic ability. I wanted desperately to be a wrestler, but I wasn't any good. You know, I was lucky to get a break.
Interesting to hear that.
But I had no athletic ability. I was no good at it. Luckily, I got a break to get in it. Got in it, and then like my view sort of changed. I was quite happy working there. Then I think, well, I'm slowly getting a bit better. Perhaps I can work on the bigger circuits in England, and I worked on that. And then when I got to about 18, I started looking. Oh, probably a bit, yeah, about 18. I started seeing Dave Taylor and Tony Sinclair, and Pete Roberts was my big idol.
Right.
And they were never in England much. That you'd see them occasionally on shows. And they always seemed to have a suntan, and they were always just coming back from somewhere sounding exotic to me. And they were like this small group of British heavyweight wrestlers that were world-renowned for being really technically sound. And they'd fly them in to make everybody look good and look like they could wrestle, you know, and do these long, drawn-out wrestling matches that people can't do anymore, you know, like between 8 or 15 5-minute round wrestling matches, and put people in and out of things and all that. And so I thought, I'd like to be, that just sounded like the best job in the world, you know, because they weren't stars anywhere. They were just, but they made a lot of money doing, a lot of money for England standards. And they were always away. And I thought, that's what I want to do now. So then I started learning that kind of stuff. And luckily for me, because I was tall, I started getting heavier, you know, because it was always a bit of the heavyweights did that, and a lot of the other fellas didn't. Like, the big stars in England were all smaller fellas, really.
Right.
It was the way it was. And so that was that. And so from 20, I got onto that kind of run from 20 to 24.
But let me stop you right there. All of the guys, the difference when you watch, you know, guys who just start in America versus guys who start in England, I mean, it's a European flavor, the style, it's completely different.
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, the arm stuff, the reversals of the roles, I don't even know how to describe it because I don't speak technical European wrestling jargon. Mm-hmm. But it's always interesting to see, and you can see a lot of your influence, or at least some European influence in Daniel Bryan, who can do a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously he's having a great run right now, and I know you guys are really good friends. But why is it that you guys were just
Do you want to know what this? I think it is. I've tried to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I'm trying to say.
The first thing starts with the rules. An open punch, you were disqualified instantly.
Okay, and y'all enforced the rules.
Enforced the rules.
Go.
So that's where the uppercuts come in.
Right.
That was where it was like strikes and uppercuts.
Okay.
The next thing that I think it comes from is the technical stuff. is because the rings were so small, 14 foot most of them, and wow, rock hard.
Right.
And so you had to, you couldn't be flying around doing a lot of
that kind of stuff. You've got to put your time in and, tell a different kind of story.
And it was also a matter of putting on only so many matches on the card.
Right.
They used to, most cards used to only have four matches. Right. So everybody had to put time in. And it was just the way that it started with the rounds. The rounds were already in place.
Yeah.
Well, it just seemed to be that way. Because, I mean, believe me, I'm the big protector of British wrestling. And,
right.
And that's what I do and try and keep it. But if you go back and watch a lot of it, it was rotten. There was incredibly good, brilliant technical wrestlers, but most of the big stars weren't. They weren't technically sound.
Really? It's funny because when I saw you come to the United States, I could watch you go out with a guy who'd really literally been in a business for a couple of months, and as long as you could hang onto that guy's arm and put yourself in reversals and come out of it and go down and do the things with him, I mean, you could take a guy who was green as grass and have a pretty damn good match with him due to all that knowledge.
Due to that stuff. Well, that... There was several different types of wrestling in England. There was every weight class had a championship belt.
Right.
So you had your lightweights, middleweights, mid-heavyweights, heavyweights. The lightweight guys were Johnny Saint and Steve Gray. Johnny Saint will say that his style is what he calls escapology style, which is, it's purposely a show style of getting in and doing fancy things to get out of them. So Johnny Saint does this escapology style. It's really technically getting in and out of holes, but there's not a lot of aggression going on. It's very fancy looking wrestling.
Tip for tat almost.
Yes, but that's the style of it.
Right,
that's
I like watching his work.
Yeah, it's fantastic stuff, and he does it incredibly well. It's bad when people try to copy his stuff because it just never looks right. You know, there's certain ways you have to be taught this, and then. The heavy middleweights especially, that was the Mark Rocco and Marty Jones that popularized that style.
I mean, describe that as a technical high-speed cruiserweight style?
Yes, that's where it all started.
Battering ram type stuff too.
Incredible. Yeah. And anybody...
Stuff that would translate to Japan.
Yeah, well, it was taken to Japan.
Yeah.
And people get it all mixed up and say that it was Tiger Mask that started that and Dynamite. It wasn't.
Right.
You go back and watch Marty Jones and Mark, and I say this a lot, but you go back and watch them from 76, 77, 78. They were doing stuff then that nobody had ever seen.
Right.
They invented that style, and it was that heavy wrestling-based style with very physical, because, you know, a lot of the lightweight stuff wasn't so physical. Very physical, because they didn't like each other.
Right.
And so they were always trying to out-top each other, and they were...
Straight-up shoot.
Yeah, they were not, you know...
Very competitive.
Every other one, they'd be putting one into each other, just because they'd grown up together and they didn't like each other. And they evolved this style, and then Dynamite came along when he was a kid, and he had a very technically, incredibly British style, but then he started doing that stuff, must have picked it up off them. And then Tiger Mask came to England as Sammy Lee in the late 70s, and he had his own style, and it was all this mixture of styles, but they were the ones that Mark and Marty were the two that set it all off. And then Tiger Mask, like Sammy Lee, went back to Japan, became Tiger Mask, took Rocco over there as his nemesis, Black Tiger, and that's where it became popular, and everybody thought it started then. But then there was the heavyweights. Now there was the show heavyweights, the Big Daddy and the Giant Haystacks, which were the big monsters and stuff. But then there were the very incredibly sound, technically skilled heavyweights. But they weren't big stars in England.
They
were the ones that went overseas because they were in demand in Germany and Africa and India and that.
They wanted to see the more work aspect
rather than the
attraction guys like Haystacks and Big Daddy.
Yeah, and so you wouldn't these heavyweight guys that I became a part of. They were basically trunks and boots guys with short haircuts.
Technicians
that could go, and they were in demand all over the world because they could trust, bring these
guys work.
In. Yes, and that was it, and work with anybody and put anybody in and out of things and make them look like they could wrestle whether they could or couldn't, which was a big skill to have. And they were always in demand, and they always had a lot of work because the thing was, what you wanted to be if you were in England, if you were heavyweight, you wanted to go to Germany. You were in Germany.
You always talk about Germany. I know Fit went over a whole lot. Fit Finley, a good friend of yours, and a guy who I have so much respect for. What was the deal with Germany?
Well, Germany was 6 months of the year. Otto Vance, in the CWA. You would start off in, when I was doing it, you would start off for 3 weeks in Graz in Austria. It was running tournaments. So you were in the same building for weeks at a time with no travelling. And a lot more money, probably three times the money that you would be making in England.
And how were the houses?
Through the week, not so good. Tuesday nights was always good because it was free ladies and they always had some kind of beer promotion on.
Yeah.
And then, like, Wednesdays wouldn't be good. But weekends, they may have, like, a special thing on a Thursday.
Right.
Friday, Saturday would always be very good. Sunday was always some kind of a gimmick thing, like a chain match or something they'd built up to. So, you know, there was...
How was Otto as a promoter?
I thought he was obviously a very smart guy to work...
Everybody I've talked to that was there loved it.
Yeah, I mean, so you were there...
And the lifestyle was kind of...
It was incredible, right? You go for 3 weeks in Graz, which is a beautiful city, right? And you all lived in... You lived like the circus. You lived in trailers, caravans, and you either... Some of the places were in a... Like in Germany, were in a big tent... like a circus tent, and you'd be on a big, like a big car park, and you could park your caravans next, just like the circus, next to the tent.
Yeah.
Or if you were in Austria, you'd be in these beautiful campsites in the middle of these mountains with lakes and stuff.
Yeah.
And then we have to be at the in the building at, or in the dressing room at 7 o'clock. Well, 6:30, it's time to drive over to the, leave the campsite, and you'd be living on these campsites, go to the gym, hang out by the lake all day or the pool. It was a hell of a lifestyle, you know. Sit and barbecue your food, and it was just good. So you have 3 weeks in Graz, then you do 7 weeks in Vienna. Well, 7 weeks in Vienna is about as good as it ever gets through the summer, right? It's the most beautiful city in Europe. Then you'd go into Hanover in Germany and do 9 weeks there, and then you'd do 5 weeks, right, take you up to Christmas in Bremen. It was a hell of a lifestyle, right? So no travelling, basically. The best of the best people to work with.
Right.
Very good money for that period.
Now, were y'all
of time.
Working straight matches or were y'all doing the 5 minute rounds?
It was all.
Because when I watch World of Sport, a lot of 5 minute rounds.
Yes. In England, it was 5 minute rounds and like sometimes 3 minutes, but usually 5 minutes, either 6 or 8 5 minute rounds. In Germany, it was 5 4 minute rounds with the original, because it was running tournaments over, you know, say there was 20 fellas, you'd all wrestle each other over so many times, depending how long the tournament was, and that kind of a thing. And then, like, there'd be a tag match every night, that wouldn't be included in the tournament points and all that. So that
now, would they run a tag match straight through?
Yes.
Okay.
But the 5 4-minute rounds, that was the normal match in Germany. Well, if you went through a draw with somebody, then you did another match with them, and then they would have extra time, maybe like you'd have a 5 4-minute round, and if it went a draw again, you'd have an extra 10 minutes at the end of it, or sometimes an hour match. You know, there'd be like these different things to make it interesting for the people coming. That these tournaments ran like that. That's how they sort of worked.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, a new fantasy football season is upon us, only it's going to be 10 times better because I have a new app to share with you, and it's called Sleeper. Sleeper is a modern fantasy experience designed to connect people over sports with its integrated chat and sleek interface. Sleeper users talk more to their league mates, and their leagues simply feel that difference. Sleeper is free with no ads. It's a genuinely premium experience. Sleeper offers fantasy NFL, NBA, and even LCS League of Legends, and it gives you total control over your fantasy draft and season. Redraft, Dynasty, Best Ball, Sleeper is made to play fantasy sports your way. Sleeper is the fastest growing fantasy platform with millions of users built almost entirely on word of mouth. Available at the App Store, Google Play, or on your desktop. Go to the App Store and download the Sleeper app and start playing today.
When I first started watching the World of Sports stuff, the 5 minute rounds kind of first for me because I grew up all in American style wrestling, usually run straight through times time. And many times under 6 minutes, you know, whatever. And so you go to the 5 minute rounds, I'm like, oh man, this kind of throw me for a loop. But then I really started studying it. And each 5 minute round, I mean, it's like a mini match.
Yes.
I mean, because you've got built in psychology in 5 minute spurts.
Yes.
And you know how one guy comes, and you know, maybe someone catches a fall or he's hurt the other guy. What's a minute break between rounds?
Yes.
And so it's very intriguing once you get into it and watch.
Well.
Hey man, these guys are working their ass off. I mean, they're doing the great stuff in the ring and a lot of the technical stuff because I was watching the lighter weight guys go. But just within the framework of each 5 minute period, you know, and you know they know where they're going with it depending on how many rounds they make. And do they go the distance? But what happens in each little setup, dude? Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of damn planning and doing that for I don't know how many weeks in a row, you know, whether you're doing the 4 minute rounds or in England doing the 5 minute rounds. But man, if you're working every single night, you're damn sure getting your chops in.
Yes.
Like crazy.
A lot of reps.
It will really make you. I mean, if you have the ability to acclimate and be talented, if you can't learn there, you can't learn anywhere.
You can't learn
but
anywhere.
It's tough.
Yeah. Well, it didn't seem it. It was just.
Well, yeah, because you were used to it. But, okay, check this out. So, finally, what was the big decision? So let me pack up and get to the States. Because I just wanted to ask about the transition between going from rounds to our system when you came in as Steve Regal.
You know I waffle on a bit, right? So there's always
hug back stuff. No, good. I got the recorder running.
I was doing all that stuff. So from 20 till 24, I was never at home. I was literally wrestling in England maybe 2 months of the year. And I was living there, but I was off all the time. And the last year I was there, 92, I was in England for 2 months. I was away for 9 months.
What did your dad think when you hauled off and took off? I mean, was he behind you? He think he's going to fall on your face? Wanted you to get a regular job?
He wanted me to take over his construction business and be a bricklayer, you know, and I just knew from a little kid.
Did you break his heart or he was cool and supported you?
No, he broke his heart, but he's always supported me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's great fella, and he's always. But I still think to this day, he still thinks I'm going to go back and start up his business again. You know.
Yeah.
So I got like traveling, and I was just nonstop traveling, and I was doing all this stuff. And then 1991, out of the blue, I get a FedEx come to my house from the WWF. I didn't even know what a FedEx van was or a FedEx. I'm sat in my house and. A van pulls up outside. I had a few things in my house that shouldn't have been in there. Let's put it that way. Because it was all, you know, just the life and the people I on ground with were always buying and selling things. And, you know, like, and not bad things, just video recorders and stuff.
Yeah.
And that was part of just to get through life. That's what I did. And I thought it was the SWAT team come to get me. So I'm panicking. I see a van pull up outside, you know, with writing on that I had no clue what it was. I thought, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
It's off now, right? Yep. So I'm
finally
like,
caught up to me.
I'm sticking stuff under the couch and everything, like trying to ram stuff up in the attic. And there's a knock. Oh, here we go. And it's just left this letter on this FedEx from the WWF. Can you come to the Royal Albert Hall?
So you opened it.
Yeah, right. I looked on the back and it said WWF. Oh, all right.
So. Now, what year was that?
That was 91.
Okay.
So I get this, can you come to the Royal Albert Hall? We'd like to look at you. Where's this come from? This is like a punch in the face, right?
Yeah.
You know, a good punch
in the face.
Yeah. So I go down there, and I get down there, and I have a match at the Royal Albert Hall. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It was something they put on, it was like a special show for England, and they did a Battle Royal, and Davey Boy won the Battle Royal, and that. And then they asked me to go to Wembley the next night, and they talked to me there, and they said, look, and that was in the days when everybody had a character, and everybody said, look, we like you. It could be several years till we get back in touch, but we will keep in touch, but we like you, and we'll find the right thing for you. Because I was only, I'd have been 20, 21, 22, 22 maybe.
Yeah.
I said, great. A couple of weeks later, I get a call. WCW was on, like, late night TV in England. Can you come and do work for us? This was November of 91. Still to this day, don't know how I got that. I think it was Scott Hall, because I knew Scott from 1989 in Germany. I spent
a
couple of months with him there. I don't know who suggested him, but I still don't know.
How did he do over in England? I mean, over in Germany.
Germany, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. He was always a good worker.
Brilliant. Yeah. it was Texas Scott Hall.
And he with a big cowboy hat and big mustache.
People loved him.
And yeah, good looking dude.
And he fit right in there, yeah. You know, because he knew exactly how to do his stuff and to fit in with everybody. So I don't know. I've asked him and he's never admitted, yeah. He never said one way or the other. But anyway, so I go and basically Giant Haystack was there and they wanted to look at him. And I wrestle with Giant Haystack all the time. Hundreds of times, right? So they wanted me to wrestle him, and then they said, can you stay for the rest of the week because somebody's hurt or something? I still never found out what. So I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll stay with you. So we did a couple of days in London, and then we did a show in Sheffield, and then we did a show in Dublin. And in that week, I wrestled Terry Taylor, Jimmy.
That had been fun. You guys had a great
incredible
match.
Yeah, and we'd never, you know, because we... You know what winds me up a lot when people say, oh, well, I've got a different style. I never had any problems working with any of them fellas that from that era of group.
That knew how to work.
Exactly.
Right.
It's nonsense. It's all nonsense. It's people who've never learnt the job properly.
Yeah.
If I turn your arm one way, it goes that way. And if you turn, I go that way. And if you hit me, I sell it that way. Right. That's. And so there's anybody who gets that there's a point when, well, he has a difference. It's just people who don't know what they're doing, really.
Right.
And they make excuses for their lack of abilities,
right?
So I had a great week. I worked with Michael Hayes, Terry Garvin, Terry Taylor, Giant Haystack the one day, and then Oz. I worked with Kevin when he was still Oz.
Yeah, how was that?
Oh, double red rotten.
Yeah.
No, it was okay, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, he was not... He hadn't, you know, he was still trying to find himself at that point, wasn't he? He wasn't sure, and that was a terrible gimmick he was given. But, you know,
yeah.
I remember being in Dublin. Anyway, so they said at the end of the week, well, we like you. We want you to come. So I'm thinking, well, whoever gets hold of me first, right? Because I'd seen the writing on the wall by
right.
then. You saw American shows were on TV in England now. Once you've seen that, you don't want to go back to watching... you know, a little ring with a 100-watt light bulb above it.
Right.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah. It's fun for a while.
Fun for a while.
And all of a sudden you get a taste of it.
They get to see that production and everything. And I wanted to come to America, you know. I mean, I always wanted to come to America. Everybody does, right? Well, most people do. So now it's looking like a natural chance for me to come. So I go about my business the next year, 92. I am absolutely book solid. I work the first 2 months in England every single night. It was on fire. There was the TV had been, World of Sport had been taken off TV in 1988, and it went through a few ups and downs.
Why did it get taken off TV?
There was a lot of it to do with the promotion and not making any new stars. That was one thing, but that's not everything. Basically, a fella called Greg Dyke, who now is the head of the BBC, came to ITV, and he decided that wrestling and you know, darts is a bit, professional darts is a big thing in
England,
and snooker, things like that were too working class. He was a fella, you know, Oxford educated or Cambridge educated fella. He wanted to upgrade everything and thought that the working classes, which is most of Britain that watch TV, because there's such a big class system, he thought he knew better than they did. So first thing he did was move wrestling in a 2 year spell. He moved wrestling from 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which it was always on, regular spot, 4 o'clock on a Saturday. This would be saying in England, everything stopped at 4 o'clock. That's the working classes.
So I was serious about the wrestling.
Working classes watch wrestling.
Yeah.
Right? Moved it from 4 o'clock to midday in 1986. Everybody, not everybody, but most factories, everything else, everything worked half day on a Saturday in that period of time till 12:30. That was a work week in England, 5.5 days a week. Within a week of them moving it from 4 o'clock till 12, the figures dropped in half just for the time spot. And then there was a lot of other things that went in with the, you know, not making any new stars and you know, all kinds of stuff, production values and whatever else.
Yeah.
But within 2 years of watching the figures drop off, you've got perfect excuse to just take it off, right?
Right.
When it was took off, it was still getting 4 point something million.
Yeah, Jesus.
It was still getting... People would die for that now, right? 4 point something million. You know, main shows on a Saturday night don't get that. And That was when they took it off.
So then what happened to the wrestling scene there in England if they didn't have a TV?
It went underground for a while. A lot of people had to get jobs, you know. Brian Dixon, who was the what we used to call the opposition promoter, he sort of came into his own then. Dale Martins, who ran the TV, sort of went away to a big degree. Brian Dixon kept running shows and he had all the best talent that was there and just kept running and running.
Right.
And everything was posters and word of mouth anyway.
Right.
And regular buildings, through the winter. Most places you did every month or every 2 weeks. And kept it going. And so it fluctuated a bit. But by 91, 92, everything was on fire again. No TV and all the buildings were doing incredibly well. Now, they're only small buildings, right?
Yeah.
Between three and 5,000 people. But I was in the beginning of 92, it was Dave Taylor against Fit Finlay chasing for the British Championship, chasing each other on one tour. Mm-hmm. Ryan had two shows a night.
Right.
And then the other show was Kendo Nagasaki in a tag match with whoever he was and whoever else was fitting in there. So you'd be going between the two. I was at that time, there was a, remember Evad Sullivan, Dave Sullivan?
Yeah.
Right, well, he was over there. He'd been in Germany, and he came to England, and I was on a few shows with him. Like, so we were just sort of moving around between the two tours and just busy all the time. Or I'd be, some nights I'd be on in the Nagasaki tags, me and whoever, and Pat Roach and against them too, and whoever. Right, was always working. And then March the 1st of that year, I went to India for a month, and then I went to Germany about 10 days, then I went to South Africa, then I went to Egypt. And luckily, I hadn't got any work booked for... Germany was very, very hard to get in. It was a very close...
Right, clicky.
Clicky. Everybody wanted the spot there. Now, I'd had bits of it here, there and everywhere. And I get a cut. I'm just sat at home. I've got the summer... I've got it booked up in England and stuff, but I hadn't got a lot else. And I know I had plenty of work coming up in September. I was going to go... all kinds of place, I forget. But I get a call from Otto Vance. Can you start in Graz next week? Or in 3 days, I think, at the start of his tour for the rest of the year. Yeah, well Steve Wright, Alex Wright's dad, he's fixing an aerial on his roof and fell off and broke his leg or done something.
He was a wrestler?
Yeah.
Okay.
Alex,
second generation?
Yeah. So he was a big star, his dad. He was one of their mainstays.
Wow, interesting. I didn't know
for
that.
For 20-odd years, yeah. Or you want to watch, there's a match of his dad, you want to talk about technical wrestlers, his dad against Tiger Mask from Japan. Steve Wright.
Steve Wright versus Tiger
Mask.
He
eats Tiger Mask's lunch.
Really?
For 20 minutes. Gives him nothing, not a drink of water.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And he just used, that's what he used to be like with everybody. It was like ride of your life trying to wrestle.
Right.
He was so fit and so in incredible condition. If you look at him, you'd think, this fella, he don't look like nothing.
Oh, I'm going to check it out.
People would be scared to death of him.
Really? He would how big a fella was he?
Not a big fella at all.
But just was a buzz saw.
A machine.
Right.
Just blow you up and drag you about and you wouldn't know what was happening.
Straight up.
Straight up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so he gets in. Can you come? Yeah. So I ended up staying there through the rest of the year. September. Rip Rogers is on the tour.
Yeah.
Rip Rogers came in to my trailer one day and said... are you still in touch with WCW? This is 92 September. I said, the old way, I don't know if this was like when you were starting, but the way we used to get booked everywhere, wherever you went, this was one of them tricks, wherever you went, you just send a postcard from Durban, South Africa. Hello, this is Steve Regal. Just telling you I'm working here. And send it to all the promoters you knew because it made you sound like you were in demand, which you were.
Yeah.
Well, he said, you still in touch with WCW? I said, and this is funny because WWE, I had a letter off them every 2 months, came to my house in Blackpool, set with a printed letter, we've got you on file whenever there's something comes. I was still getting those letters a year after I came to America.
Who was sending those letters?
Somebody in the office, I don't know.
But they were maintaining touch?
Yes.
Okay.
Never heard anything off WCW because you know how unorganized that was, right?
Yeah. So,
but Rip Rogers said to me, can you, have you got nice handwriting? And I went, well, yeah, it's the only one thing I ever did at school. You know, I got nothing else but I can write. My knuckles tell tales of that because nuns used to batter us over the hands with like a cane force you to write.
So you get pretty handwriting.
That's the only thing I've got right, is good handwriting. So he said, Bill Watts has just took over WCW. He said, and I've worked for him, and he said he'd like you, but he's very particular about certain things. About every couple of months, I would send out like a printed resume, you know, like and whatever, you know, just another 8, because you never sent videos in them days. It was 8x10s, just a picture of you.
Yeah,
you know.
That was all.
Yeah, it was it. 8x10 and your resume, and I've worked here, there, you know, and you can call this fella for a reference. Yeah. That was the way it was. So he said, this may sound strange, but if I dictate it to you, can you write it? He said, because he likes to hear certain words. I said, yeah, of course I can, yeah. So there's all these sayings like, I train diligently and this and that, you know, this and that.
Yeah.
So I ripped this letter, I sent it, and used to have to, it was about an eighth of a mile walk from my caravan to the phone box to call home every day, you know.
Yeah.
So obviously, that was the way it was, a handful of coins and call back to the wife. I go and call. About 5 days later, I call home one day. She said, can you call this number straight away? I sent this letter off that Ripper told me about. Can you call this number? Bill Watts wants to talk to you straight away. So I get straight away put through from his secretary to him. I'm like in the phone box. Honestly, my hands was going in and out like a fiddler's elbow, trying to put these coins in this thing like that. Couldn't get enough coins in, like just eating them up, calling America.
Don't hang up on me now.
Calling from America, right. Big pocket full of change. And he said, I'd like you to come and work for me. Can you come like now? And I said, I'm sorry, I can't. I said, I'm here till Christmas. He went silent for a while. And he went, have you got a contract? I said, no, but I've given me word that I'm going to be here till Christmas. And he went, and another long silence. I thought, well, that's me screwed, but, you know, that's the way I am. That's the way I do business. He went, you've definitely got the job now. Most people would have just quit to come here, he said, and I like that in somebody. He said that you didn't quit, you know, and you give your word. He said, that's sealed the deal. When can you? He said, I'll get you here. He said, when you've finished there? I said, well, 2 days before Christmas. He said, well, I'll get you here for the 1st of January.
That's awesome.
Then it was just a matter of my wife at home having to find that much, because I was in Germany, finding that much stuff to get to send, to get visas and stuff, all these programs, everything that I'd ever done for the last 10 years, she had to find proof of that I was a wrestler, you know, to get these. It's easy, a lot easier for them to get visas now. And she was sending stuff. And by the time I went, I got here, you know, it's not that easy to get visas, I landed on the 23rd of January, and then the first day I met you was the 25th of January, 1993.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
You own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
All right, back in business here. Talking with Lord Stephen Regal, William Regal. Whatever I'm calling
King of the Jabroni Tribe.
King of the Jabroni Tribe.
We used to sing that song all the time to me. What was that all about?
I don't know.
Lord Stephen Regal, King of the Jabroni Tribe. I don't know. You had all kinds of verses for it and everything. You actually put thought into it.
Different space at a different time. Yeah. We was on a bunch of different levels back then. We're both on straight and narrow these days. Hey, man, what was your favorite town to work? Favorite town to work in? Anywhere in the United States?
I used to like that place we used to do in Columbia, South Carolina. You know,
why'd you
stage,
like that?
You know, there's like the stage and that. I watched you and Ricky wrestle like 45 minutes one night in there. I don't know. It was weird that. It was just that little place, but there was just an atmosphere to it.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It was just one of those places that I always, you know, you know, these great big arenas, but after a while they all become, you know, obviously Chicago and the Garden and places. But there's just the intimacy about that place was something magic about it.
I enjoyed back in the day when we were doing TV in Atlanta, because, you know, we just make those towns. I mean, it was Dothan, Alabama, it was Columbus, Georgia, it was Macon, Georgia. It was one of those couple of towns in South Carolina that were kind of close by.
Yeah,
we do those.
Anderson, Greenville and Anderson.
Yeah, Greenville and Anderson. But everything was so local. And I remember those days. The buildings were usually half to three quarters full.
Yeah.
And those were television tapings. But houses were where they were. The business wasn't the greatest period of, we've seen.
Was the best time. I think my favorite time period of my career was that point in time when there was me and you were traveling and we were on all those shows, what they called the B crew.
The B crew was rocking, though.
It was rocking. We had the best working team, and we were in all, and you go to like Florida and we'd base ourselves in Orlando and we'd do all those little Davie, Florida, all these little towns for like 10 days, and we'd come back, do TV in Atlanta, then we'd do the Carolinas for a week or two, and then we'd do the Georgia show. But those ones when we were away and we sort of, me and you were doing them drives, and you just go and you'd work hard and you'd come out and you'd be sweating and it was just magic.
It wasn't. The business was a lot more simple back then, it seemed. It's a giant machine.
Do your thing, right?
Get a shower and get down the road.
Yeah.
Remember back in the day when we was filming TVs in Orlando, Florida, you and me used to stay out in the hotel at Kissimmee.
Yeah.
And there was that British pub, Rover's Return. We'd always go, man, we'd get loaded up on Guinness, throw darts all night long, go back to the hotel and do it all again. And that was some great times.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite match or just a list of a couple of matches that are your favorite of all time?
That I've had?
No, just any match that you would like to watch, that you've liked to watch.
My favorite match of all time was the match that's on, you can watch it on YouTube, is Marty Jones against Mark Rocco from 1978. Marty's wearing red tights. That's my favorite match. Then those 89... Flair Steamboat matches.
Yeah,
I used to. I got those on tape, and I used to do my squats to watching them.
Yeah,
that 1 hour match. I used to put that on, and I used to just stand and do squats watching it, or step ups.
Yeah,
weird, but I used to do that, and I thought, well, if I can do this, I can keep up with them.
Right,
and I'd do it for a full hour with them. But that series of matches they had then were fantastic. There's that many. My favourite live match that I ever saw was in South Africa, which was again Marty Jones against Gamma Singh from Calgary.
Really?
Gamma was incredible. If you watch him from the Stampede stuff, he worked as a villain. When he was a wrestling babyface, we got to Durban, it's an outside show, and they were on main event, I'd been on early. It was always a walk-up business there. About 5 o'clock, it started torrential raining.
Uh-oh.
By the time we get to the show at 7, there's like, usually there'd be probably 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 there. It's a tennis stadium. There's probably 1,000 diehard fans, right? They go on last in torrential rain with all the fans moved up into a covered stand. So there's nobody sat around ringside at all, just empty, except for me. I went and sat in the rain, pouring down, and they did 12 5-minute rounds straight through with no falls. And it was like that scene in that film Paradise Alley, you know, at the end when they're like slipping on the water and like...
Yeah.
And they just work, and I'm like, I'm totally in awe to this day of what I witnessed that day. I've never seen it on. Maybe it's on a film somewhere, because there was one just turned up on YouTube recently. I had no idea it existed. My first ever time in Durban in 1989. There's a full match of me and there when I was 20. So somebody may have filmed that match, but it was in the rain.
Right.
I don't know if I'd want to watch it because it might not hold up
right.
to my memories, and that would ruin it for me. But that. What else have I seen? I've seen that. Well, I mean,
what did you think back going back to what was it? WrestleMania 3, the Savage versus Steamboat match.
This is a weird one for me,
and I know why.
Yeah, I loved it until I talked to Ricky about it.
Right. Okay. Enough said. because I know.
Yeah. And it really put me off. Like, I still love it.
If you just watch it now for what it is, and I mean, it's for wrestling fan standards, it's one of the greatest matches of all time.
Incredible.
But when we're talking about on inside, what we're talking about, as far as your stay here in the States, or you know, when you was over in England, your favorite world champion body of work in here in America. Because you get different guys. You get guys that are funk guys. You get guys that are race guys. You get guys that are flair guys. You guys get a Michaels guys or a Bret Hart. Where are you at on that?
I have to say Ric Flair, I think. I just because
of, okay, know, now what was it about Ric Flair? Because he's my favorite pro wrestler of all time. And you're going to hear many people, depending on what camp they're in, and again, wrestling is subjective. And people are going to say, if you've seen one Ric Flair match, you've seen them all. Well, that's like saying if you've heard one Boston song or Led Zeppelin song or Metallica song, you've heard them all. Because everybody, every band plays within their structure of what they do. Every wrestler wrestles within the framework of what they do. So why would you say Ric Flair in your estimation?
That was the... I didn't see American wrestling until 2 years after I was already wrestling. Right? Couldn't get any tapes.
Right.
You know, people forget that, you know. But I didn't own a video until... You know, I was just leaving. Well, my parents had one just as I was leaving home.
Yeah.
We had black and white TVs when I was a kid, you know. So I got some tapes, and it was one of the first stuff I got was the NWA from Charlotte. And so I've seen him go out there with all these people, and just something about him, just the way he did his stuff, and just the charisma and everything about it, and just carrying himself like a pro. And and then, like, I got to see, I saw all the best matches because that's the only ones I was getting. I wasn't seeing everything.
Yeah.
I was seeing the Steamboat matches and the Bruiser Brody matches and people stuff that was like, oh my God, this fella just keeps going. And that was a lot of it as well. It's just the conditioning.
Right.
And to be able to, you know, I can go a long time, but at my pace.
Right.
His pace was 20, same with you. Your pace is 20 notches above anything I've ever done, you know, because that's the way you were. And I'd watch you in these long matches with Rocky and with H and that, and I'd be watching, how do these fellas keep going, you know?
Like, well, most of them I'd blowed up, but I kept going.
No, but you kept going.
But the thing about Flair was, what I liked what he did was, you know, sometimes you need to take you down in a match, and just by feeling it or listening or his instincts, he'd know when things that needed to be put in motion, time to speed things up, time to shut somebody down, time to get a little heat, a little bit of hope, something. Yeah. His timing was just so good, and he did it within just a, you watched his body, he looked like a pro. He was so relaxed. Yeah. You know, he adjusted the trunks a little bit, put his hair back, maybe a woo or whatever, but just the way he executed his business. Yeah. It got time to get nasty. He was mean, you know, and he was kind of that, you know, that cowardly heel. And I mean, you know, so he wasn't a tough guy.
And I liked his.
But when it came time to get mean, he got mean.
What I liked was when I used to watch another thing that drew me to him was that the way he did certain things. And I knew he'd had some kind of a British influence. And then I found out later Billy Robinson. Because the way he put a wrist lock on was the proper way to put a wrist lock on.
Right.
Instead of that old Chinese burn kind of thing that people do. I don't still get that. You know what I mean? But he put a proper wrist lock on. Mm-hmm. Little things that he did correctly.
Right.
I used to love watching Dory Funk Jr.
I loved watching Dory too.
So I just liked the grinding and just the work standard.
At first when I started watching Dory Jr. stuff, and this was in a different frame of mind back in the early 90s. I mean, I was like, this guy's kind of boring. But as I got educated to, like, what is great wrestling, I was like, oh, Dory Funk Jr. is one of the best. And I loved watching his stuff and still do. I mean, all of his stuff looked fantastic and totally credible.
See, I have an open – there's certain ways I put myself in different times when I'm watching wrestling.
Yes.
I'll watch any kind of wrestling and enjoy it if there's effort.
Right.
I don't care if it's right or wrong. What people say there's no right and wrong psychology. It's just different. You go to different countries, they do things that you work for different companies, they do things a different way. But as long as there's effort.
Right.
So I look at, sometimes I'm looking at it from that.
Right.
If I'm in a mood to look at it from a point of view of, like, I see a lot of people. My thing was, and this is, I never, because I wasn't very good at this to start with, and I never bought into the whole coming from a carnival and a show atmosphere and all that kind of stuff, it wasn't. I never wanted that term about being a good worker.
Right.
This was the way I based my work on. I used to talk to loads of people, and I'm sure you do, who don't like wrestling, right?
Right.
And when they used to say, when people say to me, I still do, yeah, but when them wrestlers do that, it looks, that was all I ever wanted to do was, I'm going to make sure my stuff doesn't look like that.
Right.
That was my whole outset, mindset on how to make my wrestling.
Interesting.
And it was like, if you say that looks phony when they do that, I'm going to make sure I work on mine until it doesn't. I'm going to make sure that whether you like me or not, when you watch it, it looks as believable as you can do. Or if in doing comedy, you understand that I'm doing comedy and it's funny.
Right.
Or if I'm everything is that my, if right. I talk, you say that all you ever hear from wrestlers is,
right.
That's not what I'm going to do.
Right.
And or if I do it, you're going to know that I'm, there's a reason for
right.
it. It's, and there's a lot of thought out stuff, you know what right. I mean, that I've always thought like that as far as getting in. I haven't got any, I've got no athletic ability. I haven't got, I can go my pace and I can do my stuff and I do it. And I've always think, avoid anything you can't do and do the things you
right.
can. And so I can't do that, but I can do this.
Right.
If you want believable looking wrestling, and I think I'm as good as anybody
right.
at it. That's just what I do. Grinding away and storytelling stuff. You want comedy, I can do comedy.
Right.
But it's just watching other people and, God, they're good at that. I marvel at people. I sit there marvelling at people going, God, I would never think to do that in a million years.
Right.
I watched Sean. I watched when he, especially when he came back in, more so when he came back in 2000. And just that, look in that thing,
yeah.
look in his eyes, and I'm all about believing. You know,
yeah.
I say this job comes down to three things. Whatever, it's got nothing to do. It starts in your brain, it goes into your heart, and it comes out on your face. And if one of them things is not right,
right.
people, some people buy into it, but a majority, to really capture the masses, you've got to truly believe in what you're doing.
Right.
And you've got to show it on your face.
Right.
And if it's not showing on your face and through your eyes, and people go, if you can see into every, you never trust anybody that you can't, that won't look at you in the eyes. And as wrestlers, we seem to forget that. Everything comes through the eyes. We attract from that. It's that belief in yourself.
And you hit it right on the head. I agree with everything you're saying about those three things. Sometimes these days, you know, when you can pick a green guy up who's trying to do those things, but the belief is not there. Mm-hmm. And you see through them because they're overacting. And so I totally get with what you're saying, but some people, when they don't really believe it, but they're trying to emulate that, mm-hmm. it's not the same. There's a big difference. And that just comes with, you know, learning the trade. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're going to wrap this thing up. I know you got to get down the road.
Yep.
I'm going to download this thing right now as soon as we get through talking. I lost the last damn computer chip.
Oh.
We're here in Los Angeles, California. You're in my house. You're down in Los Angeles for another 2 days. There's a big cold thing going through
Atlanta. Yeah.
Atlanta. You can't get back to the ATL. What are you going to do for the rest of your time here? You know, we were here for Monday Night Raw. I went down to Staples Center. You and I talked with a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
Saw Road Dogg, Jesse James, Badass,
yeah.
Billy Gunn. A lot of guys had fun hanging out. Got a chance to finally talk to Bray Wyatt, good kid.
Yes.
Starting to buy into the gimmick.
Yeah.
He's got his head screwed on straight.
Yep.
And what's the guy in the orange jumpsuit with the Wyatt family?
Oh, Eric Rowan.
Yeah, Eric. I met him yesterday. Didn't get a chance to meet Luke Harper.
Luke Harper.
You had some words with him.
Yeah.
He's going to turn up the volume. It was a good show. Bray Wyatt caught a good win off match. Rey Mysterio didn't hurt Ray none. Vicious looking gimmick out of nowhere.
Yep.
Clean in the middle. Wyatt's are speeding up the process. Man, the show's changed a little bit, man. I tell you what, you go down there, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, man. I went to see Kevin Dunn in the production truck, and there's monitors. I mean, more monitors than there ever was. There was a pre-show going on. I mean, it's like I had to leave. There was so much going on, it was blowing my mind.
I marvel. That's another thing. I sit around and I go, how do these people do this?
I don't know.
And I'm a part of it, and I'm like, how do you just watch Kevin walk out of his truck for 2 minutes, and I'm thinking, I look at him and I'm trying to. How does he do this? How does he manage to do? How brilliant is he? That he can do all this. And everybody there, I'm looking at the production people.
Yeah.
I'm going, How do they do all this?
Dude, I mean, all the wires would go running everywhere. Oh. And, you know, I used to always go talk to Kevin Dunn every time I'd go to Monday Night Raw. He's a friend of mine. But just the way it keeps growing, and they're feeding the app, all the different stuff going on. Before we go, they're going to launch WWE Network.
Yes.
I went down for the presentation in Las Vegas. It was badass to know that they've got 100,000 hours of original content, all this other stuff. Legends House is finally going to play the reality show they filmed a couple of years ago and couldn't find a home for. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with those guys underneath one roof. What are your thoughts about the launch of WWE Network and what it means to have access to all of this programming and content?
It's just incredible, isn't it? I mean, I'm looking at it from a fan perspective.
I am too, because I'm a fan.
Yeah, I'm a fan, and it's like there's all this. But, we probably take for granted what we've been a part of. But there's all this stuff that we...
And I forgot most of the stuff I've been a part of. Now, I don't want to watch my stuff. I just want to be able to type something in and have immediate access. Because, it's going to blow YouTube out the water. Because it's YouTube with slick sophistication and presentation.
And I'm really looking forward. There's such a lot of stuff that I didn't see.
Right.
Because I couldn't get anything in England.
Oh, you're going to have a field day.
I didn't see a lot of WWE stuff because I was always working.
Yeah.
It was only on Sky, and it didn't come on until the late 80s. Well, I was wrestling, and I certainly didn't have Sky, you know. There's a lot of stuff, NWA stuff, all those territories that they own. That's what interests me, and that's where, if you're smart, you'll be learning from. If you stayed in a territory for a long time, you had to be good and do different stuff because you had to keep going back to the same places. And that's what I'm fascinated in.
Right.
What did these fellas do that stayed around in these territories for a long time? So I'll be picking, why did people buy into his act? And I'm really, my brain's going overtime now about thinking that's when I'll start, because whether I use it or not, I'll give it to somebody else to use or try and use that. Well, that idea works, and there's such a big lot of new stuff that I can find, look about, and just going back and watching stuff that we were a part of, and you forget that. You know, I don't want to watch any of my wrestling stuff.
No, me neither.
I was never really that happy.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never been happy with it.
Oh, I can watch my stuff and I cringe.
Exactly. Yeah. But I'll go back and watch all the comedy stuff I've done because I enjoyed all that. You know what I mean? Because that much of that stuff, that's my stuff, because I pull off that and there's a bit of Tommy Cooper and there's a bit of this. And So but just to watch everybody's stuff and stuff that I never thought about before. You just get a thought in your head. I'm doing it every day. I get a thought and I'm Googling things, right, about bands or wrestlers and that. I can just watch that now, and that's going to be fantastic.
That's the fact, $9.99 a month, and this ain't no plug, but I mean, $9.99 a month, get all the pay-per-views, including WrestleMania, and you're still going to get your Monday Night Raw, you're going to get your SmackDown on TV. I mean, you got access to all this stuff. So anyway, it's going to be a badass thing, and so many guys have before us have paid dues.
Yes.
We did our thing, and now the current generation is doing their thing, and the people into the future. But, Steve, to be good in this business, you know, because you did it, you got to live it, eat it, breathe it, sleep it.
Michael A. says this isn't a job, it's a lifestyle. It's true, isn't it?
It is.
And everything suffers because of it, unfortunately, but that's the way it is. You should know what you get. I was told my first day into this, you come in with nothing, you go out with nothing. Enjoy the ride.
Right.
And know what you're getting into. And that's what it is. It's all time-consuming, isn't it? That's probably why I only get 2 hours sleep a night, because my head won't stop thinking about stuff.
Yeah.
Whether it's for me or for other people, I live and constantly thinking.
But these cats right now, man, the current crop of cats that are in the ring right now, whether it's guys or divas, I mean, guys specifically, we're talking about the guys. Man, you got so much time traveling. A lot of these guys in buses, or if you're not behind a wheel, if you're riding shotgun, you can be watching stuff and picking up stuff. Like you said, seeing what's working, listening to that crowd.
Yeah.
What's old is new. I mean, hell, half the stuff that people used to do, nobody's doing anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway, not to be late to beat a dead horse, but anyway, you're going to haul ass, go do your thing, shop in Beverly Hills, ride down road, Deo Drive. Did you get your convertible?
You know better than that. I'm scared to death, me. I drive 40 miles an hour. What was all that about you? You're mental, you, driving. I used to scare the life out of me.
We used to,
Yeah, you are. You're mental.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a 70-mile-an-hour man. That's it. I don't go.
Oh, man. Now, these days, I buckle up for safety. And if I get on a freeway and I'm driving down to Texas, I'm driving, you know, with a little bit of radar, maybe 85, but I got the seatbelt in. I
never go in a convertible because I've been in a car and had it roll on me. And
I'm not a convertible
fan. The only thing that saved me was the roof.
Yeah.
So that was
I don't dig that. Thought of. Yeah. No. I'm not a drop-top guy. No. I got to have a ceiling over my head while I travel. Yeah. I'm going to get a roll bar put in my stuff. Anyway, talking to Steve Regal. He's got a haul ass, and I do too. Catch you down the road. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
Pluto TV is playing the biggest movies every night this summer for free. Watch hit movies like The Matrix, G.I. Joe Retaliation, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Scary Movie, Runaway Bride, and more all summer long. Check out the biggest stars like The Rock, Keanu Reeves, Tom Cruise, Julia Roberts, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and more. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of free TV channels in English and Spanish featuring TV shows, news, sports, comedy, and more, all for free. Download the free Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device, including Android and Apple smartphones. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.
Hey guys, Jay Cutler. Started a new podcast called Uncut with Jay Cutler. Most of you know me from the NFL, some of you have seen me on Instagram, and some of you know me from the reality TV world. Each week I'm taking you along with me as we discuss football, trending topics, and whatever's going on in my life each week. I'm bringing along people that are special in my life, former teammates, friends, and some new people that I like and respect. That's what you're supposed to do, right? Podcasting? I think I'm doing this right. Can't wait to get started with you. Go subscribe now. Uncut with Jay Cutler, Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.